pull up a chair. I want to tell you about an airplane that had no business surviving. Not one mission. Not 10. This airplane flew into the teeth of it 207 times, and every single time she brought her boys home. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tail Dragger, and this is the hangar where we sit with the old machines and let them tell us what they saw. Today we're standing in a restoration bay at the Smithsonian, looking at the most battle-scarred American bomber that still exists. Her name is Flakbait. Now, before we climb into her story, let me tell you who keeps this show in the air. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight, first solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. And friend, if there was ever an airplane that earned a coin, it's the one we're talking about today. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. So, let's go back to the middle of the war, when the Martin B-26 Marauder had a reputation that made grown men swallow hard. They called her the Widowmaker, they called her the Baltimore Whore, because the wings were so short and stubby the pilots joked she had no visible means of support. She came in hot, she had to. That little wing needed speed to stay flying, and if a green pilot let the airspeed bleed off on final, she'd quit on him and drop a wing, and that was the end of it. There's an old line from the training fields down in Florida. One a day in Tampa Bay. That's how many Marauders they were losing in accidents at MacDill, while they figured out how to fly the thing. The airplane was fast, it was heavy, it was unforgiving, and the men who were assigned to it were, frankly, a little terrified before they ever fired up the engines. Now here's where it gets interesting. Once the pilots learned to respect her, once they learned to keep the speed up and fly her by the numbers and never ever get lazy on approach, the B-26 turned out to be one of the toughest, most survivable bombers of the entire war. By the end, the Marauder had the lowest combat loss rate of any American bomber in the European theater. Lowest. The airplane they swore would kill them all ended up bringing more crews home than any of the others, and no Marauder made that case better than the one built in Baltimore and handed to the 322nd Bomb Group. Serial number. Well, we don't need the serial number. The crew gave her the name that stuck. There was a comic strip at the time, and a little critter in it. And one of the men said this airplane was going to be a magnet for flak, bait for the guns, Flakbait. Somebody painted it on the nose and it stuck, and I'll tell you, it turned out to be about the most honest name ever hung on an airplane. She flew her first mission in the summer of 1943, and then she just kept going. Picture the flight line before a mission. It's cold, that damp bone cold you get in England in the early morning. The grass is soaked, there's a smell of high-octane avgas and hot oil and rubber, and underneath it, cigarette smoke, because everybody smoked and everybody's nerves were shot. Two big Pratt and Whitney R2800 radials on each airplane, 18 cylinders apiece, and when they light off they don't purr, they bark. They cough a cloud of blue smoke and then settle into that deep chest-rattling rumble that you don't so much hear as feel in your sternum. The crews climb into Flakbait in the dark, six men a pilot, a co-pilot, a bombardier up in the nose behind all that glass, a radio operator and gunners. They're wearing everything they own because at altitude it's 40, 50 below and the airplane is not heated in any way that matters. The metal is so cold it'll take the skin off your hand if you grab it bare. And then they go and do the thing that no sane person would do. They fly straight and level in formation right into the flak. Now let me tell you what flak actually was for the youngsters listening. The Germans had anti-aircraft guns, 88mm mostly, and they'd throw a shell up to your altitude timed to burst right in the middle of the formation. When it went off, it threw out a cloud of razor-sharp steel splinters in every direction. You'd see it first. Ugly black puffs of smoke hanging in the sky ahead of you, and you had to fly through them, because a bomb run is straight and level and predictable, and there is nothing you can do but hold your heading and pray while the airplane bucks from the concussions and the steel rains through the aluminum. And Flakbait flew through that 207 times. She came home shot full of holes so many times the ground crews lost count, more than 1,000 hits over her career. The chief of the ground crew, a fellow who loved that airplane like it was his own child, once said she'd been hit in every major part of the airframe. Her hydraulics got shot out, her electrical system got shot out, she lost an engine and came home on one, her tail got chewed up, her prop got hit. One time a chunk of flak came right up through the floor between the pilot's feet and kept going out the roof, and he didn't have a scratch on him. They'd patch her up overnight, and the next morning she'd go again. Now here's the part that gets me. Every airplane has luck, but luck runs out. The math of that war was brutal. In the early days, a bomber crew's odds of finishing a full tour without getting killed or shot down were, frankly, terrible. Airplanes disappeared all the time. A ship you had breakfast next to would simply not come back. And by supper, somebody else was sleeping in those bunks. That was the arithmetic. And in the middle of all that, one battered Marauder just refused to be a statistic. Mission after mission after mission, while the airplanes around her fell out of the sky. Flakbait kept sliding back onto that wet English grass with her engines coughing and her skin full of holes and every man aboard still breathing. By the time it was over, she had flown more combat missions than any other American bomber in the European war. 207, she flew on D-Day. She flew against the bridges and the rail yards and the gun positions. She flew through the whole long grind of 1944 and right on into 45 all the way to the end. And when the shooting stopped, somebody, thank God, had the sense to realize what they were looking at. Most of those warplanes, you know what happened to them? They flew them out to the desert or to a field in the Pacific and they ran them through the smelters. Hundreds of thousands of dollars of airplane, chopped up and melted into ingots and sold for scrap by the pound, whole air forces. Gone. It broke your heart. It still does, but not Flakbait. The Army Air Forces marked her as historically significant, and the nose section, the part with the name painted on it, and the mission markers stacked up like a diary of the war that went to the Smithsonian. And that's where the second half of her story lives. For a long, long time, only the front of the airplane was on display, just the nose. You'd walk up to it and there she was, that famous name, and rows of little bomb symbols painted on the side, each one a mission flown. 600 plus little markers by some counts for missions and for the time she led the whole formation. A lot of folks over the years only ever saw the nose and figured that was all that was left. But she wasn't gone. The rest of her, the wings, the fuselage, the tail, all of it was in storage, in pieces waiting. And here's the part a warbird man loves. The Smithsonian decided to bring her all the way back. Not to flying condition, no, and I want to be honest with you about that, because it matters. They made a decision that I think is exactly right, even if part of me, the part that wants to hear those big radials again, aches a little at it. They decided to preserve her, not restore her. There's a difference, and it's a big one. A restoration, you strip the airplane down. You replace what's rotten. You repaint her fresh, and she comes out looking like the day she rolled out of the factory in Baltimore. Beautiful. But when you do that, you sand away the war. You paint over the patches, you throw out the original skin with the holes in it and put on new metal, and something honest is lost forever. Preservation says no. Every patch the ground crews riveted on under a work light at 2 in the morning, we keep that. Every repair, every scar, every original scrap of fabric and metal we can possibly save, we save. The conservators at the Udvar-Hazy Center, out at the big museum near Dulles, they went over that airplane practically rivet by rivet. They stabilized her. They cleaned her with the gentlest touch you can imagine, the way you'd handle an old letter that might crumble. And where the original patches were, they left them. Because those patches are the story. Those patches are where a 19-year-old kid stood on a cold hard stand and put Flakbait back together so she could go out and get shot at again tomorrow. They put her back together, all of her, and today she hangs complete for the first time in generations. Nose to tail. The whole airplane, wearing her whole life on the outside where you can see it. I've stood under airplanes like that, and I'll tell you what it does to you. You go quiet, all the noise in your head just stops. You look up at that battered aluminum and you understand, in a way that no book and no film can give you, that this was real. Real men climbed into this real machine on real cold mornings and flew it into places designed to kill them. And this one, this stubborn, patched up, shot full of holes girl, she got them back. 207 times. That's not a display, that's a witness. And that's why I get a little grumpy. I'll admit it, when folks say old airplanes are just old metal, they're not. An airplane like Flakbait is the closest thing we've got to sitting down with those crews and hearing what it was like. When she's gone, when the last of that generation is gone, she'll still be hanging there, telling anybody who'll look up and pay attention. So if you ever find yourself out near Washington at the Stephen F. Udvar-Hazy Center, go find her, stand under the whole airplane now, not just the nose. Count the patches if you can, and say a quiet thank you to the ground crews and the flyers of the 322nd and to the conservators who decided her scars were worth more than a fresh coat of paint. My thanks today to the National Air and Space Museum and their conservation team for keeping Flakbait's story straight and true, and to the historians of the 9th Air Force who wrote it all down while the men who lived it were still around to tell them how it really was. You can find us anytime at radiohangar.com. Keep the blue side up. And next time you walk past an old airplane, slow down a little. She might have something to tell you.